papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and...
Welcome to The Media Project, an inside look at media coverage of current events. I am Nat Rex Smith. I'm Judy Patrick. I'm the former editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady and vice president now for editorial development for the New York Press Association, filling in as host this week. With us today is Barbara Lombardo, former editor of the Saratogian and adjunct professor at the University of Albany, where she teaches young journalists. Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld, and David Gustina, adjunct professor at the University of Albany as well, WAMC morning news anchor and producer of this fine program. Thank you all for being with us.
Thank you, Judy, most importantly, for filling in whenever I need you and never complaining about it in front of me.
And thank you, David, for cleaning me up every week.
And thank you, Ira, for always making it.
Yes, I used to be the fill-in, and I got tired of being put on the spot. No, I'm only kidding. I'm happy to see Madam Chairman Judy in charge today.
This meeting of the Mutual Admiration Society is now concluded.
All right, and let's start with some good news. A multi-county prisoner swap in Turkey has freed Evan Gershkovich, a Wall Street Journal reporter arrested in Russia in March of 2023, and at least one other American held in Russia, along with a leading Russian dissident. According to Turkish officials, there has been a long, long drawn-out campaign to free Evan, Wall Street Journal reporter just doing his job, who's been wrongfully detained in Russian prisons. He was convicted and sentenced just a month ago in July to 16 years in a federal prison. So this is welcome news, but the Committee to Protect Journals has noted already that 24 journalists remain in Russian prison. So what are we to make of this? Is this good news? How are we going to continue to monitor what's happening in Russia?
As we sit here recording this program, we don't yet know all of the small print in terms of what this swap is all about and what the motivations were and what are the political ramifications. I'm surprised to hear what Judy just mentioned about 24 other journalists, and where have they been and how come they have not received the similar calls for their release as was Gershkovich?
Or attention, because I can think of Gershkovich or Gershkovich. That's a whole nother issue. How do you pronounce a name and get it right? But who are these other journalists? Why aren't we hearing about them? We also should say U.S. Marine Paul Whelan was freed in this agreement. And you don't necessarily or won't necessarily know, right, Judy, what's going on inside of Russia. Even Russian journalists who want to find out don't get access.
If you remember, right after the start of the Ukrainian war, Russia passed a law making it illegal to refer to the conflict as a war, the Ukrainian war. And so that cast a pall over journalism in Russia. It's revived a bit, but you have to wonder about what's going to happen going forward.
When you mentioned 24 journalists, you mean from other places as well as American. And sometimes we Americans forget that we rely on coverage provided by journalists from all over the world to report in dangerous places. And I can't express my appreciation enough at how much we take for granted on what we're going to hear for people who are willing to put their lives at risk. I was so crushed when Evan had gotten the terrible sentence, and now for him to be released. So it's almost, okay, so they're going to let a whole mess of prisoners out, including convicted murderers, and okay, I guess that's part of the trade-off that you have to make. I was pleasantly surprised that they are doing that during a time that would make the current administration look good, that the Russians are agreeing to it. I think it behooves the media to continue to report this and kind of answer the question that you and Ira were raising, Dave, about why don't we hear more about these people? And the press needs to continue to remind people that freedom of the press has a cost.
The Committee to Protect Journalism does good work in that realm.
Yeah.
And Evan had the advantage of working for the Wall Street Journal, one of the most honored, storied news organizations in the world, and having the American press be behind him. But a lot of the journalists still in Russian prisons work for smaller publications in smaller countries, and we need to keep them in mind as well going forward.
I like the part of this where we can turn to academia for a second and say that our students, I think, need to hear about the dangers of being a journalist, that journalism is a serious profession, that it is not without the possibility of you being seriously hurt, imprisoned, or even killed. And it doesn't just happen to foreign journalists. And when you have, for example, a former president of the United States running right now that continues to use fake news, as he did just the other day with ABC, you can create even more danger for journalists, like our own country experienced on January 6th.
Yeah, I still remember seeing the protesters attacking the CNN news cameras on that incredibly terrible day in Washington. So it is something to keep in mind. Former President Trump is not letting up on his attacks on the media, neither is his vice presidential candidate, J.D. Vance. I think it's one of the first things he started after when he was named the nominee to be vice president. So something to be wary of. But overall, good news for Evan. I look forward to seeing the first thing he has to write about this. As a reporter, he's got some stories to tell, and I'm anxious to see what they are.
Is there any evidence that we know, I certainly don't, that this, in fact, has had a chilling effect, that accumulatively these kidnapping of him in particular, but others, and the 24th from other countries, are news organizations, and I'm not just talking print, are they becoming hesitant to send people to places like Russia because anybody is exposed? I mean, look at the basketball player was in jail. Well, how long was she? 3 years?
Brittany Griner spent 293 days in a Russian jail on drug smuggling charges.
I mean, certainly after the breaking out of the Ukrainian war, people did, especially American media companies, did withdraw their reporters, but we've seen them go back in. They're very careful about what they report and how they report and what they say, but they are still there. I'd be interested to see if Evan actually goes back to Russia, because he's born of Russian immigrants. He speaks Russian fluently. He loved the country. He was doing great work for the Wall Street Journal. That will be an issue for him going forward. He's a young guy, paid a terrible price for just being a reporter and doing his job. So let's get to the National Association of Black Journalists. They had a conference and they invited Donald Trump, the former president and now the Republican nominee for president again. They invited him to be a guest at their annual conference in Chicago. There are about a dozen media issues we could talk about, but let's start at the beginning. Some members said Trump, given his history of attacking black journalists and repeating lies, shouldn't have been given the platform in the first place. Karen Atiyah, a Washington Post columnist, announced on Twitter that she was stepping down as this year's conference chairman in protest. Others took a different view. Some of the best journalists in the country are members of this organization, and why wouldn't they want to interview Trump? Where do you fall, David?
Well, I fall, and I think many of us do that are journalists, on the sort of cliche phrase, light is the best antiseptic. You got a former president of the United States wants to run again. He's making all sorts of statements that are racially, by many analysts' accounts, racially motivated. He certainly said there were, quote, good people on both sides when it came to Charlottesville. And you should feel that it's your right to question him on this very issue, especially at the National Association of Black Journalists, where I think the ABC journalist who asked those questions, Rachel Scott, was right on target. Let's see what he says in the face of what were facts. And we saw where he went. So if you want to know how he feels, and I think we should all want to know how he feels, especially in a racial context after his last administration and where he thinks the country should be going. Well, you got it. And I know, Judy, you have some thoughts on whether we were set up, that he came to this prepared to do just that, get back some attention to him than from his now opponent, Kamala Harris.
Right. Did he play the convention or did the convention play him? I am of the belief that Donald Trump missed the attention, that he was not at the top of the news cycle day in and day out because Vice President Kamala Harris is running a very vibrant campaign that's, you know, sucking out all the news from the daily news cycle. And he wanted the attention and he went there and that's exactly what he got. Barb, do you think they should have given him this platform?
They definitely should have given him this platform. This is the National Association of Journalists, and journalists want to hear from the big names of people and who's going to be a bigger name. The danger is when the person that you're trying to have a civil, instructive Q&A with is totally out of control. This was classic, classless Trump. This was Trump being Trump. And the person who's not going to answer the questions, he's going to turn it around to say whatever he wants to say, which turned out, I think, for people that are concerned about him. We didn't learn surprising things about him, but he did say new things. So he's got the Harris spin on the old birtherism issue. He made a lot of headlines.
I was surprised that there was even hesitancy on the part of the organization as to whether or not they should invite him. And Exhibit A as to why they should have invited him is what happened when they invited him. The questions were tough and his answers were eye-opening.
Nasty.
Nasty and rude. Rachel Scott deserves as many cheers as you can give her for the line of questioning, the specificity of the question, that she wasn't rattled when he tried to turn it around. But the transparency that was offered by Trump by being there, clearly it was the right move to have him come in and speak. And as to Judy's point, I don't know, it's less a media issue than it is a politics issue, but it can be argued that he was ready for bear, and he, for better or worse, he left there with the base cheering him on because he came on strong against the media and against black people, but that other groups, women and minorities, who perhaps were leaning towards switching to his side for this election, I'm wondering whether that is gone for good now.
I also want to stress that the questioners were civil, polite, they were assertive, they were not aggressive. They weren't rattled, and they weren't nasty. They were asking legitimate, well-thought-out questions. They preceded it with examples to back up why they're asking their question. They did the job professionally.
Yeah, I use nasty because Trump immediately called them nasty. It's the same word he's used against female journalists when he was in office. He would call them nasty, potentially, you know, a sexist frame there. But on top of all that, it teaches young people. I go back to young people again. If you're a young journalist, he was complaining, what, you don't even say hello? No, we're here to ask someone who was the top leader in the world serious questions about race. And as Rachel said, let's get right to the point.
Would he have felt better if the interviewer started it off by saying, thank you very much for being here, Mr. Trump, and then went ahead and asked that question?
No, because he, as you said, he's probably loaded for bear walking into that room.
You know, it's interesting we talk about this because Howard Kurtz, the media critic for Fox News, criticized the media for not even raising the issue of the hostile conduct of the National Association of Black Journalists. It's interesting that from that perspective, they viewed some of those questions as hostile.
I watched that, and not only the questions when you read them, but how they were presented by the questioners. They were not rude.
That sounds like a dog whistle to me, Howard Kurtz.
Yes.
I have a theory about Howard Kurtz. I believe I've expressed it before on this program, but I believe that the person portraying Howard Kurtz is an imposter. And it's not the Howard Kurtz who used to work for the Washington Post and then CNN, who was an honest broker about media issues. And then he went to Fox News and he all of a sudden has become, well, how shall I put it, he fits right in with the Fox family.
You know, for those of us in journalism who teach others to conduct interviews and have had to conduct interviews ourselves, sometimes be interviewed, what do you do when the person that you're interviewing is just out of control? They won't stop talking, but they're not answering the question. They're interrupting you. And how do you reel them back in? This was a nationally broadcast, live-streamed event, even though it's the convention's Q&A, but they were not successful on stopping him from talking. How do you get back on track? They did cut it shorter than they were going to have.
It's harder when you're in broadcast TV streaming because the audience may well think you're being a bully or you may think you're not allowing that person to speak. This is one place where print has an advantage, where if you and I are having an interview in a closed office with no cameras around and the interviewee becomes a broken record or otherwise goes off topic, there's a little bit more leeway for you to be a little bit rude and nasty and cut that person off and say, you didn't answer my question.
Well, right. And I think part of it is you keep your composure, just like you suggested, Barbara. Keep your composure, ask the serious question. Don't get animated. Don't get angry about it because this person isn't answering. Just keep repeating the question. And you keep telling them if they haven't answered the question, you still haven't answered the question. And at some point, I think you shut up yourself. Use silence and let that person bury themselves like Trump sort of did when he kept going on.
That reminds me of something I had to learn as a new reporter is the answer is the answer. And I remember being very upset coming home from an interview where I thought I was going to be exposing some wrongdoing, and the person wouldn't admit it. They just kept denying it or answering questions that I wasn't really trying to get the answer to.
Which sometimes means reporting fully doesn't get to the truth.
Right. So the answer is the answer.
It just illustrates how hard it is to interview the former president. And sometimes our efforts to fact check come across as combative when we're just trying to set the record straight. And this whole series of exchanges with these reporters is a classic example of this. And again, it's a continuation of his attacks on the press. I think he really enjoyed it. And the follow-ups from him have been, again, he's doubling down. I think he thinks
so is his vice presidential candidate.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there will be some people who are still swayed to support him even after that. Oh, yeah, that Harris, she's such a faker. She just tries to take advantage of whatever background. They're going to just build on what he's saying. But I think getting this out, and Ira, you're right that you have more leeway in print to stop somebody and set things back on track. But this would not have gotten the kind of traction if it wasn't aired live. And now as the media, we need to continue to be cognizant about how we report these things so that in a headline and in a lead in a story, it needs to say that Trump falsely claims that Harris, that you have to not just say Trump claims something.
The headline I sent us from Washington Post, Trump issues many, many falsehoods at Black Journalists Convention. There it is, right in the headline.
Well, you know, the other thing that we have to remember as journalists is that this is just the beginning. We have another month of the honeymoon for Harris, the new VP, and then the convention. And right around Labor Day, which is the traditional start of the election season, particularly if Trump believes he is vulnerable, and I believe there are indications that he already thinks that, although he wouldn't admit it, they're going to pull out all the stops. So it's going to get nastier, and it's going to get more vociferous. And it's going to be very difficult for reporters and editors and broadcasters to make decisions as to what they should report and what they shouldn't report.
And how will the media... Sorry, it's not all one singular. I know, Rex. It's multiple.
No, that's different. I'll take credit for that.
That's true. I mean, not all media is the same. But how will the media be reporting on Trump's age from now until the election?
I think we're already starting to see it because the comparisons are being made between the 59-year-old woman and the 78-year-old man. And he's invited the attention and he's going to get it.
And are his ideas old?
Regrettably, no, because there's a lot of support for them.
Yeah. Well, his ideas are old if you mean being misogynistic and is being demeaning to women.
And should we be saying that, those things, that this is racist, what he says?
I suspect others will say it for us. We'll report it, others will say it, and the opinion makers will say whatever they want.
I have to say that not only has Harris energized the Democratic-leaning public, I think that it's also energized the news media, which could be maybe mistakenly interpreted as being like happy that this person could win the election, even though there probably is a little bit of that or a lot of that. But I think it makes it a much more exciting race to cover. There's more exciting questions to ask and stories to tell.
So. And there's more sound and, you know, you're following a new person and there's more information now that we can bring in that's new, and everything based on documenting what's happening is, by its very nature, when you view it and observe it, more exciting than what was happening before.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think the national media was prepared for a long slog to November. It had been a long slog for the last 2 years as well, but to have things turned upside down like that, and to have the size of the crowds, the noise of the crowds, there's so much unknown at this point. As of this taping, we still don't know who the Harris vice presidential candidate is going to be. So
we just heard about golf carts going through villages for Harris in, I think, Texas?
No, it was at the villages.
In Florida.
Which is a renowned conservative residential area. But, you know, Judy, two things. One is whether or not the reporters or the media in general are breathing a sigh of relief with Harris. And she is not opening herself up yet to interviews and hasn't for quite some time. So we don't know what exactly is going to evolve between the relationship between the press and her. And right now, it's tenuous at best. On the other hand, if you think that there's a sigh of relief because we believe maybe that Trump is not going to win, for good reason, we have been afraid of what would happen if Trump did win in terms of the crackdowns that he might, as a dictator, for even for a day, would level on media. And the whole prospect of a free media comes into question with the candidacy of Donald Trump.
Ira, I think that's the biggest point of the whole show so far. You are
okay,
so right.
Good night, everybody.
It really is a great point, isn't it? How can we, as journalists, be objective when he's threatening media itself?
And it's true that Kamala Harris has not given a sit-down interview or done a press conference since she's been tapped to replace Joe Biden as the lead candidate in the Democratic ticket. It's only been a week or 10 days. It's true. She's been doing a lot of rallies and getting a lot of exposure that way.
Honeymoon period.
Honeymoon. And also as vice president, even though they are second to the president, her press exposure during her term as vice president was not significant. It's true. And I think she needs to get out there and answer some real questions. I mean, Donald Trump answered real questions from black journalists. I'll give him that. He didn't do it well, but at least he was there answering the questions.
And she could face some tough questions based on how she operated as a prosecutor from a room filled with black journalists, although they wouldn't let her do it by Zoom. There was that whole element that she wanted to participate, but they weren't going to do it that way.
Well, I don't know why that would be, because Zoom has become such a common tool in our world and in our industry. But, you know, she has not yet been widely reminded by the media of the complaints that people had about her as a candidate. I mean, she may have been the first candidate to drop out when she ran against Biden because allegedly was turmoil within her campaign. She was alleged to be a bad taskmaster and that employees did not want to work for her. So there's lots of stuff that's going to come out and start balancing the scales, although I don't know that they can be balanced when you're talking about Trump on the other side, not just because he's overweight.
So does that mean the contrast is just too great now between a Joe Biden and a Donald Trump than a Kamala Harris and a Donald Trump?
Well, the contrast is always going to be great, particularly if Trump just continues along the track that he's on now. But I'm saying that there's plenty of scrutiny that Harris has to undergo that will take the shine off of the initial sharp penny.
Hey, let's go to territory I'm really familiar with. That would be newspapers. The Buffalo News has announced that for $10 a month more than the base price, people can access their website stripped of advertising. Now, this is an idea that's been floated before, tried before, has not been successful, but given the fact that people don't like the cookies traveling and their privacy being interrupted, maybe there is an appetite now to spend a little more money and get a ad-free experience on your local news site. What do you think of the advertising that you stumble across as you're reading your stories nowadays?
Well, when I was still working, and it was at the very beginning of this part of our world, the biggest complaint I got about online content was the pop-up ads. The story that you're referencing that describes what the Buffalo News is apparently planning on doing says that the company that I used to work for is a leader in this movement. I have no inside knowledge of it. I'm not employed by them anymore, but I can tell you as a reader of the paper that I used to publish, I have not yet seen this out there. But my question is, if you pick up some revenue by not from the consumer, in return you're not going to show them the advertising, is that going to be enough to make up from the advertising revenue that you're going to lose?
That's the question, matey. So, yes, I know you were referring to the Alden Global Capital Media News Group that still owned the papers that Ira and I worked for. So I was surprised to hear that they were trying to do something that was
innovative.
Kind of creative, yeah. But I figure that if it's something new to try, if it might work, you know, let's see if it works. And as a digital subscriber to the Saratogian, I find the ads annoying. Would I pay more to get rid of the ads? Probably not. I probably am just going to be annoyed by them. So it's going to work for some people and not for others. But if there's a possibility for news companies to have digital subscribers paying enough money and in enough numbers of people that it's going to offset advertising loss, why not?
We're seeing this trend in streaming.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
If you don't want your Amazon movie to have advertising in it, you pay a little bit more.
Right. And the idea that would happen on the newspaper level is hard for me to believe will be successful. I don't know. It seems to me with video, like I could see maybe even a CNN where you want to watch your news uninterrupted by advertising, you'd be willing to pay a little more. That, to me, would seem might encourage some people to do it, but you would have to have both options at all times. Is that what the paper would have, the Buffalo News? They'd have both options, ads or no ads?
Yeah, it's a lot of bucks that you got to make up for if you start dropping advertising revenue.
Well, remember that digital advertising, although it does bring some revenue in, it is not the big moneymaker that we all hoped it would be.
No, but let's pull a number out of a hat. If an advertisement costs $50 now and you get the entire audience for your $50, then you start getting $10 from some readers, but you're only charging the advertisers $40. Are they going to get enough to make up that $40? I don't know.
Ah, that's a publisher talking for you. And that's all the time we have.
What?
Wow, that
this
can't
week.
Be right.
Oh, yeah.
And this show is going to be outdated before anybody hears it.
Thanks to Barbara Lombardo, Ira Fosfeld, and David Gustina. I'm Judy Patrick. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to join us next week on The Media Project.
Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, Adjunct Professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.